The following may contain offensive language, adult humor, and/or content that some viewers may find offensive. The views and opinions expressed by any one speaker does not explicitly or necessarily reflect or represent those of Mark Rattledge or W2M Network. Please listen with caution, or don't listen at all.
TV party tonight! TV party tonight!
Oh! We got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of brews.
Don't want to talk about anything else.
We don't want to know.
We're dedicated
to our favorite shows.
Oh, my ticket!
Everybody loves Hypnotoad!
Gary Dawg!
Larson at Blurred Ball!
Futurama!
Good evening. You are listening to a Rattledge Broadcasting premiere podcast, TV Party Tonight. I'm your host, the mandated reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge. And tonight, our favorite show is Star Trek Lower Decks Season 3, the third season of the American adult animated television series Star Trek Lower Decks, is set in the 24th century and follows the adventures of the Lower Deckers on the starship Cerritos, one of the Starfleet's least important starships. The season was produced by CBSi Animation Productions and associated with Secret Hideout, Important Science, Roddenberry Entertainment, and Animation Studios, Titmouse, Mike McMahon, serving as showrunner, and Barry J. Kelly as supervising director. Season 3 took place between August 25th and October 22nd of 2022, and we are just getting to it now in the year of our Lord, 2024. Hey, I'm not as social as I used to be, and we're trying to catch up on shit we missed when I was. And ladies and gentlemen, here he is, Canadian daddy himself. Ladies and gentlemen, from our Canadian offices, this is David Wright. How do you do, sir?
Well, I do declare, my good sir, I had a mighty fine time watching these here images on this picture box. And that's as much Mark Twaining as I'm going to do.
Perfect.
Yeah. Actually, I think it was season 4. I think we already did season 3. You know, it's funny. Like every person I talk to about Lower Decks, they keep thinking it's season 3.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's like nobody can believe that this stupid cartoon has gone on for so long.
And it's geared up for season 5. Like, this is going to keep going. The other thing, and we can start off with this, you know, way back in the yesteryear when you were like, we should talk Star Trek Lower Decks, I'm like, Dave, I don't want to. I don't want to talk cartoons anymore. I don't want to talk stupid shit.
Yeah. For context, everyone, he was suggesting that we do Star Trek Discovery. And being a good friend, I had to intervene.
I was doing that for your benefit. And then you were like, please don't. But you're like, I'd rather do Star Trek Lower Decks. I'm like, no, this seems stupid. And then you're like, please just watch it. You'll be convinced it's good. And then it was. And I was like, well, this was like the surprise hit for me. And I've enjoyed every single season. And lo and behold, Star Trek Lower Deck Season 3 actually has a 100% critical score, fresh score on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow. Even the audience score?
I haven't checked the audience score. When I was looking at the Wikipedia, just kind of taking some mental notes for the discussion tonight, I noticed, like, wow, this, you know, the critics love this show. And it's one of those ones where it's, I think, a victim of just the age in which these things exist. We probably wouldn't have it if we didn't have streaming apps, mm-hmm. you know, and the need to shove as much content onto these things as possible.
Yeah.
On the other hand, nobody watches these things because there's so much crap to watch. So people are missing out on a quality show with Lower Decks. If you're sleeping on it, and I don't know why you're watching our review if you are, but if you're just like, we just like the cut of your jib and we'll watch anything you talk about, even if we don't watch, stop watching us. Go watch Lower Decks, then come back.
That's a short review. Plugs.
Yeah, all right. And tomorrow on the Rattles of Broadcasting Network. Tomorrow. Oof. We gotta talk about Echo.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
Okay. No, go ahead. You keep trying to say
Sorry. I started watching Echo, but if you guys are already doing it tomorrow, then yeah, no chance of me.
It's only a 5-episode watch.
I know it's only 5 episodes. I'm not doing that in a day.
Here's what I'm gonna tell you. It's not worth watching.
Okay.
I kind of watched it as a favor to Alexis, and also because it was supposed to be a lead-in to the Daredevil show that had to be scrapped and rewritten. So,
and from the sounds of it, now you know why.
Uh-huh. All right, but let's talk about a much better written show.
Back to good writing.
Season 3. So the first episode, I want to start off there. Usually, as I was telling Dave before we started the show tonight, there's usually some sort of thematic thing or structural or craft element that I focus on. I don't really do episode by episode anymore, but it's all good. And the writing just continues to be solid. There was no great unifying storyline in this one. But
there's a bit of a through storyline, but yeah, it's very episodic overall.
There were a couple of things that carried over from one episode to the next. The first episode, I would say, you know, now that I said that out loud, I'm going to correct myself and say Mariner's ongoing frustration with how Starfleet operates and the lack of faith anyone has that she can be a good officer or, you know, ensign. That was, I think, if there was a theme to the show, besides some of the stuff they did with Jack Quaid's character, I would say it's that. And it starts with episode one. Episode one, her mom gets framed for something. I don't remember what. But she gets framed for committing a crime. And the Starship almost gets decommissioned. And Mariner, you know, despite the loggerheads that she's constantly in with her mom, despite the tension between the two characters, knows that her mother would never defy Starfleet and break the law. So she goes on almost a suicide mission to prove her mom is innocent. After being told by everybody and their mother, don't do this. This will work itself out. Starfleet will discover the truth and she will be absolved of any kind of guilt. And Mariner's like, no, the system never works. Look, I just had this conversation last night. Mm-hmm. And the beekeeper. She's like, no, the system never works. And I have to go outside the system to save my mom. And everything she tries fails. The whole mission objective fails. There was a lot of like allusions to Star Trek 3 in this one. You can actually see it in the poster that I have behind our mm-hmm. images tonight. That there was definitely a lot of influence in the search for Spock, you know, where they steal the Enterprise. They go after him. They then have to blow the Enterprise up. And, you know, they are sought for court-martialing by the time it's all over. But it's like, no, it has to be done. You know, it doesn't matter that Starfleet said, don't go after Spock. We're doing we're doing the right thing for the sake of doing the right thing. And Mariner is very much that influenced the writing, and it definitely influences Mariner's decision making. But it's not nearly as successful as what Kirk did. And then at the end, it's like the system did, in fact, absolve her. She's found not guilty. All the charges are dropped. They figured out who actually set her up. And Mariner is made to look like an ass. I was like, well, that's an interesting way to start this season.
Yeah, I'm always happy that whilst Mariner is incredibly capable and very good at out-of-the-box thinking, the show isn't afraid to challenge her on that sometimes. You know, she doesn't mm-hmm. always win. She isn't always right. But it also never really feels like it's trying to disrespect her through doing that. It's just showing, you know, everyone's flawed.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of criticism. Like, you know, I don't want to keep talking about Echo, but I just watched the Drinker's review of Echo, and there's this tendency to, we joked about this actually last night during the review of The Beekeeper too, where there's this tendency to write women as flawless. Their only flaw is that they can't kick enough ass. Like,
The only problem is that the rest of the world just won't realize just how incredibly amazing that they are.
Right. Yeah. Like, these aren't real people. Like, we don't know real women who are incredibly flawed, just as flawed as the men are, in some cases more. So, like, you know, we like to see reflections of ourselves in our art, and then they show it, you know, and even though we aspire to be, you know, heroes are flawed too. And it's like, it's just such a failure of writing in Hollywood right now. And this is one of the few places in Hollywood writing where that doesn't seem to exist. It's again, this almost feels like nobody at Paramount pays any attention to the production of this show.
And
it's like,
a benefit.
Yeah, and because no one's paying attention, they're allowed to just be good writers and write solid entertainment.
Yeah,
who'd have thunk it?
Yeah, it's like Batman the Animated Series. Like, we don't care what you do, just we need a Batman show on TV for the ratings. It's like, right. You want to do it on black construction paper? Fine, whatever. Just get something up by Tuesday.
Right. And like, oh my God, it's like a cultural icon. It's like the best Batman thing ever. So what did you think of that first episode?
I can say, the whole stealing the starship thing, that's been done done. We've seen it done a few times before. But yeah, it's I do like the the gotcha at the end. You know, where you think that, you know, okay, she's going a bit crazy here, but yeah, you know, she's gotta defend her mom. And it's like, no, actually it turns out that the courts actually worked. They can't Starfleet is, there's a lot of competent people in Starfleet running things, so they actually, you know, took the time to investigate.
It's almost at the level of parody. And the other thing is, one of the things that often gets said, like, you know, it's a pitch meeting gag, you know, we've said it on our reviews.
Yeah.
Why does this thing happen? Why does that thing happen? Why does this incredible thing work out? You know, why does the Joker's plan in the Dark Knight go off as well as it does? And so the movie can happen, so the show can happen. And it's so funny because nothing worked in her plan. This was one gigantic failure after another, to the point where, like, her most truest and ardent friends, you know, are like, please stop, you're hurting us all at this point. And she's like, no, I gotta save my mom. And it's like, nothing you have done has worked. And I was like, that's also an interesting take on this particular this particular writing, is a lot of the stuff works too well all the time. And then they're like, no, what if none of it works? What if it's all bad? And she's just, you know, at the end, she's like covered in purple goo, and she's just, you know, and then they all walk in like, yeah, none of what you did mattered. And it does kind of set the tone for the rest of the season later on. And I guess we can transition into this. There's an episode where one of the things that's a through thread through this through season three is she is assigned to shadow the second in command of the ship.
Ransom.
Yeah. And Ransom is obnoxious, and, you know, he's very full of himself.
Yeah, he's basically like Riker Kirk.
Yeah, and he's also not tremendously fond of Mariner. Like, he's kind of a police academy thing. Like, I'm going to be hard on you, so you'll quit because I think so little of you. And she rises to the challenge, and there's a lot of really fun banter between the two of them. A lot of like clashing of styles and stuff. But one of the assignments that she's given, he keeps giving her shitty assignments so that she'll eventually just give up and leave. One of them is they have to go down to like what's like a like career day or something, where they have to like man the Starfleet booth. And they're next to the archaeologist, and she's like a girl Indiana Jones in space, and it's great, you know. And they're like, she keeps like teasing Mariner and everything, and, you know, like really making Mariner question whether or not she really wants to be in Starfleet. And at the time, she does. This pays off later in the season, where a news reporter is sent to interview the crew and the captain. And because her mom, the captain, is an asshole, you know, wants her to put her best foot forward. And it's always like, hey, you know, hey, sweep everything under the rug. You know, let's not show her how we really operate here. Let's give her this fantasy that we're, you know, awesome and spick and span. And so, of course, she tells Mariner, for the love of God, don't talk to the reporter.
Yeah.
And so the reporter ends up doing like an expose on the ship, and it's all these horrible stories that have come out. And it's assumed Mariner told her those stories. So she is drummed off the ship.
Yeah.
And this is the point that I'm getting to. The payoff is, shortly after being drummed off the ship, she quits Starfleet. And she goes to become girl boss Indiana Jones in space.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because, like, it's hard to tell with animation, but they somehow captured the radiance of happiness in Mariner's character as she's swinging from a vine in space, getting, you know, gold totems and running from aliens, you know, like the Zulu tribe members. It's really awesome. I'm going to take a breath so you can respond to any of that.
I like it. Yeah, they really do. This is a very character focused show. I think we say that every season we review. This is not big idea sci-fi. This is more a character drama, but it's well done. Like, and you sort of see in the first episode just how Mariner cannot trust authority.
Right.
She's very, very controlling. It's like, I have to be the one to fix this because I'm the only one who can.
Right.
If someone else does it, they might screw it up. And yeah, again, we get the comedy of her not. Her not succeeding,
right?
But you see that, you know, she is someone who's very dedicated to her ship and her crew and her friends and will do anything for them, even if she is like a giant pain in the ass to the to the upper ranks.
But to her mom too. Yeah. You know, for the amount of shit she gets from her mother, she's loyal to her. And she's her feelings are incredibly hurt when her mother's like, I believed you betrayed me and told her all these terrible stories, and turns out it was the crew that did it. And then drummed her off the ship. And Mara was like, look, not to get too personal, but like I think we've all been there to one degree or another where you try and you try and you try, and the person you're trying for does not appreciate you. And it just you get to the point where you get fed up. You're like, well, you know, if you don't see the good in me, if you don't see, you know, how much I am trying for you, why am I continuing to do this? I'm just hurting myself at this point. And that's the point that Mariner gets to when she quits Starfleet.
Yeah, I mean, in Mariner's case, I would say that, well, yes, she would never do such a thing as, you know, like betray the ship,
right,
or throw them under the bus. But because of her career insubordination, like her desire to always, you know, make sure that she stays at the bottom and buck authority, I can see how, you know, like people would draw that opinion of her. Like this is partially a, you know, it is a problem of her own making in a way that people don't trust her because she spent so much time being at odds with the.
No, I get what you're saying, but it's not the kind of insubordination where it's like, it's not the kind of insubordination where she doesn't believe in the morals and ethics of Starfleet.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's more of the, rather than ascend to an officer level, I'd rather eat pie. You know, like I don't always want to keep my uniform spick and span. I think we all know that person. I kind of can be that person because like people ask me all the time, like, do you ever want to like get to be a manager where you work? And I'm like, no, I like what I'm doing at the level I'm doing it at. And I don't want to, I want to get raises. I want to get paid more.
Yes, but I'd like to be paid like a manager, but I don't want to do the job.
Yeah. I'll take the raises. I don't want any more. I don't want any more responsibility at my job, you know? And I don't think that that's a bad thing. And that's Mariner. Mariner's like, I like being, you know, she says this is what I was getting to, but I wanted you to get you involved in the conversation. You know, she ends up leaving the archaeology gig because she feels like this is a little too loosey-goosey. It's a little too freelance. And I want to be a part of something bigger, which is laudable. It's an element of her character that's written into her that makes her... It's another thing that makes you as an audience member like her and cheer for her and want to see her succeed in the face of, you know, constant problems.
You don't so much feel bad for, like, Mariner versus the universe. The big conflict that you want to see resolved is Mariner versus Mariner.
Yeah.
You know, she is her own worst enemy in many respects.
The thing about, like I said, the thing about Mariner is she's not bucking Starfleet because she doesn't like Starfleet. She's bucking Starfleet because she does not want to be anything more than what she is. She wants to, she's Johnny Lunchpail. She wants to show up, go to work, punch in, go to work, do what she needs to do, punch out and go home. Yeah. Nothing wrong with that.
Well, I mean, she sort of mentioned before, you know, like, Lower Decks, you get your hands dirty. You're there on the front lines in the situation.
Right.
Whereas in the upper ranks, you have like all these rules and protocols and egos and politics. And she just sees all that as getting in the way of actually accomplishing things.
To quote my son, I'm going to say something controversial. Mm-hmm. This might get me canceled.
Okay.
There's a lot of Kirk in her.
I can't believe you've waited this long to say something counselable on this podcast.
I know. My God. First time ever.
I know, like we've only been like doing the disclaimer at the beginning for about a year.
You know the history of that disclaimer, right?
I'm not sure. Go ahead.
I had Jeff on from The Bleeding Edge on one of the shows, and he was saying all manner of filthy misogynistic stuff, and I was dating somebody who was a paralegal at the time, and she heard him, and she was like, do you support what he said? And I'm like, no, but I think it's funny and we're trying to do entertainment here. And sometimes entertainment's going to be raw and you know, rub people the wrong way. And she was like, okay, I'm going to write you a disclaimer because you need one.
Yeah.
that was the story of that. That was from like 2020.
Fair enough. Yeah. Well, it was probably good advice.
considering the amount of people we've wished dead on this network, you know, inside
some people have wished dead. Yeah.
We're all part of the Rattling and Broadcasting Network, Dave. Anyway,
my point being, I, to do.
I think I hear the baby crying. so anyway, just to sort of wrap this up, what I was saying is there's a lot of Kirk in her, And I'm thinking again about Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan. He's been promoted to admiral.
Yeah.
And he has led himself. I've talked about this with the when we did the retrospectives and stuff, but just for those who haven't heard me say it, Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan is about someone coming to terms with aging, getting older, trying to figure out what to do with the next chapter of your life. Mm-hmm. And Kirk has let him, and Kirk is sort of in like a quasi depression at the start of Star Trek II, where he's like, we are driven to succeed. We are driven to push ourselves to try to write, you know, do the next level, do our bits for God and country at the best level that we can. And sometimes it's like a Faustian bargain where you get success, you get money, you get all of those things, but you're deeply unsatisfied. You miss what the job once was. Because at that high level, you're not doing really the job anymore. You're doing more administrative stuff. You're doing more command stuff.
Yeah.
And that's where Kirk is at the beginning of Star Trek II. And there's a lot of conversations about the movie about, you know, kind of longing to be young again and to be at the head of that starship as the captain, going where no man has gone before. That's a lot of Mariner. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, I don't, she, you know, it's so funny because the show has such reverence. It doesn't happen a lot in high IP where the writers of anything have any reverence for the IP they're writing for. But this one does. And the writers of the show definitely have reverence for Star Trek, the original series, The Next Generation, et cetera, et cetera. So when the characters talk about Kirk and Spock and Picard and et cetera, et cetera, they always speak of them like these are these legendary characters, and in universe, they are like these are big
names that everyone who would in Starfleet would know. Right.
But by the same token, she knows the story of Kirk, so she looks at Kirk as almost a cautionary tale. Look what happened to Kirk. He got promoted from the captain's chair to admiral, and all went downhill from there. And he ended up getting himself demoted back to captain,
because which is what he wanted in the first place anyway.
And I think so Mariner looks at that to kind of wrap this point up and move on. Mariner looks at Kirk as a cautionary tale and says, I'm going to do just enough to stay where I am, because if I'm too good at what I'm doing, they'll promote me into a place I didn't want to be in the first place. Which I, you know, which is the level of insight in the character writing I don't often see. And I have to give the writers credit where credit's due.
Yeah, it's a bit tricky to discuss that because I've watched season four and some of these things are sort of resolved or expanded upon in that season. So it's like, oh, I have the answers to these questions, but maybe I should hold back until we do season four.
Okay.
But as we see her, I would say I agree with you on the, everyone rises to their own level of incompetence bit or... Or the whole idea that you start a job because you want to do that job, but then you get promoted into a more management position. It's like, now I just do paperwork and tell everyone else what to do. Like, I just, you know, I wanted to do the job I signed up for.
I got promoted once. It sucked. I'll never do it again.
Yeah.
I have to be responsible for other people's shitty behavior and stupid choices. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no thanks.
Yeah, like you get that, like in the military, like jobs like, you know, pilots, like, you know, you get promoted enough, now you're a squadron commander, and it's just all like paperwork and meetings and
I want to fly a plane.
I just wanted to fly a plane, like,
you know. But you're so good at flying a plane, we took you out of the plane.
Exactly. It's
you know what happened to Tom Cruise in the Top Gun universe? He was so good. He was so good at flying jets, they took him out of the jet.
Yeah, well, actually, but he was so bad at anything other than that, they kept putting him back in. It's like Ed Harris at the beginning, you know, it's like, you know, you should be like an admiral by now or a senator, but here you are a captain, which, you know, if you're not captaining a ship, the rank of captain is not that high up in the military. It's not the bottom, but it's not the top. But yeah, for someone being Maverick's age in that film and still a captain who joined when he was, you know, a young man, that's you've done something wrong in your career, son. Like, but anyway, right. That's a different movie.
That is a whole other universe. Yeah. All right.
I think we've kind of done Mariner.
I'm gonna tag you in and say, what do you want to talk about next?
Okay, well, we certainly have some other characters. I think did they do the conspiracy Rutherford one episode storyline this season, or I think that might have been last season, where
the thing what they do with Rutherford here is his enhancement The code in his enhancement is the code that was used for the drone Starfleet.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with you. Here. Yeah. It's been a while since I've done season three, so I'm trying to quickly remember everything that happened.
Let me refresh your memory real quick and then again. So there was two things with Rutherford of note. One, the one episode where he gets like shocked or whatever, something happens to him and evil Rutherford takes over.
Yes. Yeah, that was a season. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, so there's that. And then later on, they touch back on it about they've got the one admiral who is trying to set up the Cerritos for failure so that he could prove that his drone starships were better for, which, can we just talk about that for a second? Because Jesse and I have been beating this horse to death about, you know, we are lurching and leaning towards 100% unemployment in the Western world as artificial intelligence, drone technology are starting to move us out of our jobs one by one. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because we think of that as like a modern problem, but I think a lot of people sort of with some forward thinking go, well, this is a problem that eventually reaches a resolution. We're just not going to have jobs anymore. We're going to be the WALL-E people.
Yeah, you know, see how this works. Yeah, to see what's going to happen, everyone go to Flint, Michigan.
and so by the time we get to the Star Trek world, like this should have been, this was resolved in the 21st century. Like, why are we still doing this? And it's so funny that the writers were like, nope, this is going to be an ongoing problem in society where there'll be cycles of jobs that require human intuition and then they'll get replaced too. And there's a cycle of just like, there'll always be this cycle of we need humans, we don't need humans, we need humans, we don't need humans. And I think that's, that was an interesting take by the writers of this show when they did the storyline where the admiral's like, I want to leave my mark in Starfleet. And the only way to do that was to replace the entire California class starships with drone starships.
Yeah.
And he uses, and the whole point of me talking about this was he uses Rutherford's code, which apparently, if turned just the right way, is evil. Yeah. Which is exactly what happens in the fucking drone starships, which are like, you know, Klingon class powerful, on Starfleet.
Yeah, I remember that now.
Okay.
Yeah, very, very current year issue, though. I think like they've done sort of the automated versus non-automated, you know, personnel or ships before. It's not quite uncharted territory, but yeah, here we got. We got to see a bit more of like Rutherford before he was the way he was and get a bit more of his his backstory and sort of him deciding the person that he wants to be. Yeah, so he had a decent arc. I think Tendi, we got to see a bit more of her backstory as an Orion. Like the Deep Space Nine episode I thought was fun.
Remind me what happened in the Deep Space Nine episode again.
He's trying to remember everything that happened in the Right, as I think that there was some sort of diplomatic issue with some.
Is it the one? Wait, the one where they go to the planet and you know, and they send like the wrong crew down, you know, because Ransom's trying to make a point, and it, you know, it was like Rutherford and I think like another engineer and like nearly thrown into lava.
That was a different one. No,
okay,
but I think like there was like an attack and. Or an accident, and I think Mariner Tendi and another Starfleet crew member from Deep Space Nine, who's an Orion, who's all like, "I'm an Orion, we're all pirates," and Tendi's just like, "Shut up about the pirates thing."
I vaguely remember this.
I just want to do science, and at the end, we find out that really he's like, yes, he's an Orion, but he was like never really born and raised Orion. He was basically adopted by humans or something. So he's like, I've never done any of the Orion things. I just I'm only trying to look cool. And then Tendi just does super piratey stuff to solve the problem. But you know, speaking of respect for the source material, that was just a fun episode. Just you know, seeing all the sights and sounds of Deep Space Nine again. They had Armin Shimerman and Anna Visitor reprising their roles, and it was. Yeah, they seem to do like a go back to a previous series episode every season.
That's nice. That's nice for true pride and true Star Trek fans.
Yeah, absolutely.
We should talk about Boimler. They do something interesting with Boimler. Him this season. Boimler is the exact opposite of Mariner in that he absolutely wants to be promoted. Like, yep. You know, he wants to find success in Starfleet, but he is kind of a milksop. He's, you know, he doesn't take chances. He likes to stay firmly in his comfort zone. And so because of that, he is not seen. He is not really respected. He's just kind of part of the background. And so they're like, go ahead.
He's gotten to the point where he's good at his job now. Like, he's not the naive, new ensign. He's, you know, he knows how things work now. But yeah, it's him having to get over his timidness.
Right. So one of the ways I think he's given the advice by somebody in his group of friends, say yes to everything.
Yeah.
You know, get out of your car. So there's a really great episode where he is being hunted.
Old Boimler.
He agrees to be the most dangerous game and allow this alien who has to, you know, part of his culture, part of, you know, he has this inherent need to hunt. So he was like, sure, I'll let you hunt me. And the whole rest of the episode, he's just running and just screaming.
I remember him like going to the officers. It's like, he's sending me to us. Like, well, you said yes. Good luck.
Yeah. The captain's just like, yeah, lots of luck to you. You chose this.
You volunteered.
And I think that, you know, it ends with the alien respecting him and all of that.
Yeah. And I think he gets some respect from the bridge officers too, though. Was this the one where they object the warp core in the end? I think.
I know that's later.
We'll hold off on that one because that was a glorious.
Keep it with Boimler. There's a whole incident where he's like making fun of the the head of engineering,
security chief.
Right. And
they're doing the whole he's doing the impression, but of course he's standing right behind him.
Sure. And like every other scene after that, he's like crying every time he sees Boimler.
Yeah.
And then
is that what I sound like?
And then they're all trying to figure out how to resolve a critical issue with the start. You know, they're going to blow up if they don't do something.
And finally, they're being followed by the drone ships and they're about to destroy them. And
right. And I think Boimler says, like, actually, like, he's got the right idea. He's like, wait, I do?
It's been a running joke for the past two seasons that anytime they're in sort of any sort of trouble, Shax's suggestion is always eject the warp core.
Right.
And then Boimler actually
is the solution.
Yeah. And just like him running down the hallway, all the engineers just high fiving him, you know, this is your day, man. Like, you finally get to do it.
Right. You almost waited for him to trip and fall and do the Peter Griffin with the knee thing, but nope, they let him have his moment.
They played it straight and that, you know, made them best friends. And it was just like, I love how, especially in engineering, they always seem to show them as like being very, very supportive, kind people, like, just you go for it,
yep,
sort of attitude.
Was there any other episodes that you want to talk about before we talk about the season finale?
Nothing is leaping to mind.
I want to go back to what I had talked about before, the episode where they drum Mariner off the ship, because it's part of it's almost like a two-part story.
I do have one here. Yeah, the episode where she tries to get all the engineers to go to a spa to relax.
Yeah,
go ahead. And then gets really annoyed because all they do is engineering stuff. I just love that because as someone who works in engineering, it's like, no, like, you don't understand. This is what engineers do to relax. Like, like making things. We like fixing things. That's what we do for fun.
Yeah, it was an interesting take on some, you know, on some people's human behavior, where making them not do the thing that they enjoy that is also their job is actually a source of stress, not a way to relax. You know, you ever like meet people who, when you make them stop doing stuff, it's worse than if you just let them go do things. I mean, it was that situation there, and I thought that was a fun thing to play on.
Yeah, but like I got during COVID, like I had to get a non-engineering job to, you know, pay the bills. And like, I was really like, I need to build something. I need a project. I need to, design and construct something or I'm going to go crazy.
No, I get it. One of the reasons why I started podcasting was when I first had Lily, it was a lot of downtime in the house. I was a very dedicated dad. I wanted to be home, but home is boring.
Yeah.
I can only watch so much television. You know, and so I started podcasting again because I had taken a break for a while from the first iteration of it. But like, I just started watching a lot of UFC and I was like, oh, I'll talk about this. This is fun. And I started podcasting as a way of like giving me something to do to kind of activate my mind and be social in a situation where I really couldn't leave. I had an infant to take care of. Look at me now.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, that was just one of those, like, I wish I could have just reached through into the TV and grabbed Freeland and said, no, you don't understand. These are engineers relaxing. This is how they work. It was like, there was a episode of Deep Space Nine. It, you know, one of those where some bomb or anomaly hits the ship and, you know, everyone's stranded in different compartments of the ship and they have different issues to deal with. Mm-hmm. And one is Worf's in trapped in engineering with the engineers, and he's, you know, bossing everyone around like they're on the bridge in battle, and it's just not working. And the, you know, Chief Engineer O'Brien just pulls him to the side, like, you know, look, Commander, these are not soldiers; they're engineers. You give them a problem, ask for solutions, and set them loose to come up with something.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite moments of Deep Space Nine because I let you say it because you started to talk about it, but I had to hold back from cutting you off because that is one of my, I often quote that on various podcasts that we've done where, you know, let them loose to solve the problems. You don't have to bark orders at them. And I'm like, yeah, that's good advice in general. You know, like you have, it's funny. There was a period where I was like, yeah, I'm not going to do as much of this. I need to let other people do it. And it was like, here's StreamYard. Here's access to StreamYard. Here's the instructions on how to do it.
Yeah.
Go make podcasts, you know? And it's interesting what you get back when you just let people kind of create for you. It's also, you know, even the way I do these, like kind of just asking open-ended questions, because I never know what you people are going to say.
Yeah.
You know, I never know what directions this is going to take me in. We've had a lot of fun conversations because it doesn't always have to be like what's coming out of my brain and my mouth. I want to know what's coming from you, but I won't know unless I give you the opportunity to just talk.
Yeah.
You know, and if it's too specific, you know, then it kind of takes the fun out of it. So getting back to the
two-part finale. Yeah, I'm good now. Yeah.
Good. They have the reporter come on. She sells the ship out. But it's all a plot. This is all a plot to get the California classes decommissioned.
Yeah, so another admiral up to no good.
Yes.
For every season. Yeah, I mean, one thing I will say in Mariner's defense is pretty much all of the admiralty is either incompetent or evil in Starfleet.
Well, that's the thing. Like, it's almost an unfair criticism in this case because this guy was just motivated by wanting to succeed and having a failure of imagination in doing so.
Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of like an in-joke on Star Trek. It's like
and I'm with you, but to talk specifically about this particular admiral, because I want to credit where credit's due.
Yeah, he's not malevolent. He's trying to do good by him, but...
Yeah, like, that was the thing. Like, he wasn't motivated. He wasn't even motivated necessarily by greed. This wasn't like, this is my way of, like, fleecing Starfleet. This was his line about it's so hard to succeed at this level.
Yeah.
It's so hard to make yourself stand out that, and because of a failure of imagination, he can't think of a way to move beyond admiral or differentiate himself as an admiral, which I think is a very human and interesting thing. How many of us have run across that problem in our life where you're competing with people around you and you don't know how to win? You know, there's just something inherent about you where you're like, I can't figure out how to do what the people around me are doing. And I'm frustrated.
Yeah. Where do I go from here? Like, you know, I'm an admiral now. I've achieved my goal. I'm at the top of the top. Now what?
Right. Now what am I supposed to do? It's definitely relatable. So his whole thing is, well, drone ships, you know, which goes back to what we were saying about this is a very modern theme right now in going on in world society in the year of our Lord 2024. So what we find out is he used Rutherford's code for these starships. And they're like, you don't understand. These things are prone to like turn evil and turn on their master. And he's like, no, it'll be fine. You know, it's the critical drinker.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
Be fine. It's awful.
Okay, we're just waiting for Mark to catch up with the internet connection here, everyone.
All right, how am I now?
Oh, okay, yeah, you've smoothed out.
Okay, cool. So the ship becomes like self-aware, and it then, you know, turns on the other ships, and now there's a fucking, like, there's like three or four of these things. And they're just blowing the Cerrito away. At this point, this is the point that I was trying to get to. Mariner has left Starfleet.
Yeah.
She's doing the Indiana Jones thing. You know, she's, you know, off there with another, you know, just having gay lesbian archaeology adventures like we all do.
Yeah, somewhat.
And it's just fantastic. And then she she's just like, huh, this is fun. And it's definitely the break I needed from Starfleet, especially after, you know, unceremoniously being drummed out. Mm-hmm. But is this all, you know, she has that Jack Nicholson moment of, you know, is this as good as it gets? And she's like, nope, I want to go back to Starfleet. And it's so funny because, like, the other character's like, but for why? You know, and it's a legitimate question. Why would you want to go back to, why would you want to go back to the partner that doesn't love you? It's shown you such animus. It's shown you such, you know, disregard and unappreciation. And Mariner's like, nope, I love it.
And we've frozen again.
I know deep down inside it loves him, but she goes back to it, but not before the Cerritos in deep, deep trouble.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because, like, they find out that the Cerritos and like a star base is being blown up, Cerritos is being shot at, all kinds of problems. And the other archaeologist is like, yeah, fuck them. I'm not getting involved in this.
Yeah, screw this. I want to live.
Yeah. And she's like, nope, you know, the good of the many outweigh the good of the one of the few. And she's like, ugh, you and your stupid Spockisms. And so they go and they save the day. And, you know, and in this time, Mariner contacts the other California class ships. They all show up and attack the drones. She does something else to help the Cerritos. And Mariner is seen as the hero. And of course, by this point, it was exposed what the reporter actually did to get those stories. Yeah. So Mariner is absolved. She's let, you know, her and her mother make amends. It's a really sweet. It was a nice arc for Mariner. Because again, even in the first two seasons, I don't think they necessarily made her a hero. And this, she does something very, very Star Trek-y, very heroic, which I liked. This isn't like the most tear-jerking, most emotional of shows, but this one got to me. This one, I was like legitimately like happy tears when it was over.
Yeah, and I think they got a lot of promotions at the end of the season too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They're
like second lieutenants now, which I think is a very good move because, like, you can't keep having people in the lower decks who are good at their jobs without the possibility of them getting promoted. Like, you know, you need to kind of switch up the status quo from time to time. Like, you know, we can't always do Danny and Johnny don't get along because of what happened in the Karate Kid.
Right. Hey, real quick, what did you think of the episode where they were like writing a writing a movie in the holodeck?
Yeah. Oh, it's like, I can't really remember that one too much, but yeah, I think it's like Boimler has his story, but everyone else keeps making changes to it.
Right. And I think it was like, Boimler had found out earlier in the day, and they don't reveal this till later on in the episode, that the other Boimler had died in an accident. And it was like not a heroic death or anything. It was just a freak accident on the ship that killed him. And he was like struggling, you know, and it was one of those, again, you would think like, you know, the what's the other show? Rick and Morty. You wouldn't think like the Rick and Morty would write something this like pseudo philosophical, but the whole episode is about, you know, sort of the randomness of life. You know, he's sitting here like this other Boimler. He was doing everything right, was doing everything the way that he should be and was having success and then just dies in a freak accident. What is the purpose of all of this? What are we doing on this mortal coil? How do things end up this way? That's this show asking those questions through that character, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah. And everyone else is just fooling around having fun. And yeah, he's trying to use this to process his grief. And we've frozen again. Yeah. But yeah, it's an interesting thing. Like, you know, the idea of, you know, like, or that could have been me or yeah. And then the, you know, no matter how hard you try, you know, all of a sudden just the wrong place, wrong time, things could just fall apart instantly. So yeah, the show does sprinkle in.
You're having internet connection.
Okay. Well, one of us was having internet connections. I don't know who. Well, I guess we'll find out when they listen to the podcast.
Yeah, keep going.
Yeah. But yeah, like as much as the show has a lot of good comedy bits in it, and it's mm-hmm. mostly comedy, and there's, you know, a lot of references to other Star Trek stuff. There are those moments where it does delve into, you know, deeper stuff. And, like, I do find that comedies do tend to do that a lot. Like, for all the jokes, like, comedy is about observing human nature and providing commentary on that. Like, you know, the best jokes are always the jokes where there's some grain of truth in it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, like, before we get out of here for the night, is there anything else? Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, it's like one of my favorite lines. It's from Babylon 5, actually, is... they're talking to some comedians and they're saying, you know what the difference is between a comedian and a politician? It's like, you know, a comedian says serious things in a funny way, but a politician says funny things in a serious way. And I'm like, that kind of works, actually.
Reminds me of the Eddie Izzard bit about, I think it's Prince Philip, where, you know, mm-hmm. it's like, we're always afraid of what he's going to say when he's on these foreign tours. You know, yeah. And like one of the examples he gave was like, you know, they had like British college students in like China or something. Don't stay here too long. Your eyes will get all slitty. It's like, oh, for God's sakes. Oh,
yeah. 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 That's Prince Philip. All right. Yeah. It was a different time, but
yeah,
of a different generation. But yeah, like, well, even actually, you know, we don't really talk about Rick and Morty that much on this network. But yeah, again, for all the humor of Rick and Morty, there's still some decent character work there of like just how broken of a person Rick is, despite mm-hmm. you know, his intelligence. Like, you just see, like, he is a really damaged person. And it turns out, you know, even being the most brilliant person in all of the multiverses, you know, can't fix that.
Right. All right. Anything else about season 3 before we wrap up for the night?
No, like, again, I think very solid show. I think they've, you know, most of the characters have settled into their, you know, like they've found themselves, but they're still showing these characters growing in their own ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think Mariner has definitely come. I told you I had some real reservations about this show, and it was a bit of a rough start even in the beginning. It, like, it evens out towards the end of season 1, and then season 2, yeah. They knew what the show was. They knew that, you know, they pretty much had carte blanche to do some solid writing.
Yeah.
And I would say Mariner, Boimler, even, you know, Rutherford and Tandy have come a long way from season 1. Mm-hmm. They absolutely take care to write these characters as progressing as people. You know, they are learning, they are evolving, they are maturing. And it's been fun to watch. And I'm anxious to discuss, I think, season 4 next month.
Yeah, I'm not sure when that's scheduled, but we'll figure something out.
No, I know it's on the schedule. Yeah, it's March, actually. The next time we'll be doing it is March 19th. We'll be looking at season 4, and then we'll be caught up on this. Then we have to figure out, I don't know what else you're on. You're always like on a damn you Hollywood hither and thither. I'm sure you'll be on Dune.
Yeah, Dune is a dead cert. I'll probably go see Deadpool 3, that's on my mm-hmm. list of movies to see this year. Doing Has Been Hotel with Alexis when mm-hmm. when we figure out when that's happening. I'll be in and out as things happen, but
right now,
so far it hasn't really been a good year for movies. It's not looking like a good year for movies.
Right now, the next TV party that you'll be on is actually next week. It'll be January 23rd.
Yep.
We'll be looking at Disenchantment Part 5.
Yeah,
and then, as I said, I don't have your name in there just yet, but we have March 19th, Star Trek Lower Decks, season 4. So that'll be the next couple of times you see Dave. And then, you know, Dave is always one of those. You know, it's like, hey, are you doing this? Yeah. Well, I'm on that show. That's fantastic. Let me add you in there.
Yeah. I pop in when I can.
Yep. Yesterday, we reviewed The Beekeeper on Damn You Hollywood. We had a lot of fun talking about that. I really liked it. You know, Robert had some issues with it. Take a drink. But we had a good discussion overall. And about how the nature of good and evil was handled in that movie. It's fun. Mm-hmm. If you've got some time and you can catch it before it leaves the movies and you want to support movie going, go see The Beekeeper. Tomorrow, as a favor to Alexis, I watched Echo because she could not get fuck all to review this fucking show. Not even Robert, who agreed to do it and then found out that, as he put it, something came up, and I'd rather do that than watch Echo and talk about it. I was like, wow. For Robert Winfrey, who's like down to talk about anything, because there's nothing mm-hmm. else to do, was like, nope, fuck this show. I was like, okie doke. So I am stepping up, if for nothing else, than to be a whore for content. And I will discuss the variety of problems this show has. So myself and Alexa will talk Echo tomorrow. And then Thursday, we're going to have fun. Chris Bailey is back on the Rattle Legion Broadcasting Network.
Sorry, who? And
Chris Bailey.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well done, Dave.
Yeah. I was hoping I would have to ask you three times.
Who? What? Chris
Bailey? Okay, there. All right, there we go.
Penny. Anyway.
I got that reference.
Thank you, Captain America. Thursday, me and Chris are going to do a Long Road to Ruin for the Flintstones movies, the Flintstones, and then the Flintstones Viva Rock Vegas. Next week, we are, no DMU Hollywood, but we were talking Sons of Anarchy, then Disenchantment, and then Sean Comer is back on the network. We will be talking Street Fighter, Street Fighter 2, Legend of Chun-Li, and Mortal Kombat Annihilation, because I am a glutton for punishment. All right, I want to thank David for hanging out with me tonight. This has been our review of Star Trek Lower Decks Season 3. Be well. I'm Mark Radulich. Be well, be safe, and behave.